with the Q&A.
I'm going to go backwards a little bit. I want to go back to the very beginning of the parsha. The reason I like to always usually start in the middle is because everyone always learns the beginning of the parsha. So I without going to, same thing with Masechtas. If you ever check, every Gemara is well used at the beginning of a Masechta, but the middle and the end it peters out. So I sometimes go backwards. But at the very beginning of the parsha, we find the commandments that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu. That, well, actually, what is the commandment exactly? It's not a commandment to light the menorah. It is a commandment that when the menorah is lit, it should be lit a certain way. Meaning, it's not the direct commandment that every day in the Beis Hamikdash, the menorah is lit, is actually in Tetzave, in connection with building the Mishkan. But this says, Daber al Aaron, speak to Aaron, Bahaloscha es haneros, when you cause the flames to go up, and we'll talk about that lashon, but that means when you light the menorah, el mul pnei hamnorah yairu shivas haneros, the seven candles should be facing the face of the menorah. What does that mean? Facing the face of the menorah. So Rashi explains that what is the menorah? The menorah has a central. Right, the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash is not eight candles. The menorah in the Beis Hamikdash is seven candles, and you have a central gold. It's made out of solid gold, a central shaft, and you have three candles on either side of that shaft. The shaft is the middle candle. So the halacha is all of the wicks of the menorah have to face. They should be turned inward, so they are facing the central shaft. And the concept here is a relatively simple, although there are many deep meanings, and that is the six candles of the menorah represent the 6 days of creation. It represents the creation of the world. The seventh represents both the Shabbos, but ultimately represents Hashem, that is the architect. So the idea is that all of the reality depends on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the way the menorah looked, I'm sure you've seen pictures of the menorah, but that's only the menorah itself. Basically, on top of the menorah were glass bowls, and the bowls contained oil, and the wicks were on top of the oil. Now, the menorah was lit. There are two mitzvahs about the menorah. There is a mitzvah of hadlakas haneros, and this is towards the evening, before sunset, every single day, including Shabbos. The Kohen had to light the menorah. That's called Hadlakas Haneros. But then there is an Aveda about the menorah that is done in the morning, and that is called Hatavas Haneros. Now, what is Hatavas Haneros? That every single morning, the old wicks would be cleaned out, would be replaced, the remnant of the oil that had already been dirty would be thrown out, the cups would be cleaned, and new wicks and oil would be put in. Now this was done in the morning, and in fact it was done in two stages. They would be mativ five candles, and then they would do an aveda of the tamid, and then they would be mativ the other two candles, but that was done in the morning. But the actual hadlaka was at night. Which means to say, well, I'm sorry, the hadlaka was not at night, the hadlaka was towards the evening, and it would burn at night. So in other words, there was no, if you were to walk into the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash during the day, you would not see the candles burning, because the candles burnt may erev ad boker. I'll talk a moment about the Ner Tamid, what that in particular meant. Now, this is how Rashi and Tosfos understand it. According to the Rambam is Cholek. The Rambam is a Das Yochid. a very, very shver Rambam. The Rambam learns that the term Hatavas Haneros is just another term for Hadlokas Haneros. And according to the Rambam, the menorah was lit in the morning to burn until the evening, and the menorah was lit again in the evening to burn until the morning. So according to the Rambam, the menorah would be burning all the time, because the Rambam learns Hatava is not distinct from Hadlaka. But according to Rashi and Taisvis and most Rishonim, Hatava just is the replacing of the wicks and the oil. The actual Hadlaka was only towards the afternoon, and it would burn at night. Now, the only commandment that we're given about this is that the six wicks have to face the central wick, as if to say that the physical reality must face God, must look to God, must be subservient to God, must recognize that their existence comes from Hashem, that is the central shaft. The Torah does not mention, a lot of people think this is in the Torah does not mention any phenomenon about a candle lasting all the time, a ner tamid, right? Do we have it here? I don't even remember. Unobservant there. Do we have an Ner Tamid above? Did we used to have it? Okay, I don't know. But in many, many shuls, there is like a lamp or a light above the Aron HaKodesh. And that is called the Ner Tamid, the eternal light. And that is said to be a commemoration of the Mishkan, or a commemoration of the Beis HaMikdash, in which the menorah had an eternal light. I want you, just to be sure you understand, that there is no mention of that concept in the Chumash. The Chumash does have the phrase Ner Tamid, but that simply means that you light the menorah every day. There is no mention in the Chumash of a light miraculously lasting, and in fact, that's not a halacha. Rather, at various times in our history, when Am Yisrael was an Ahai Madrega, as a sign of divine love, there was one candle of the menorah that never went out. And some years we had that, and some years we didn't have that. During the years of the first Beis HaMikdash, when there was prophecy, we were zocha to that divine gift. During the years of the second Beis HaMikdash, we were zocha for the 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol. But after the death of Shimon HaTzadik, the candles went out. Okay, so the Ner Tamid has nothing to do with us. The Ner Tamid is a divine gift. You don't put any more oil in one candle than the other. All seven candles have the same amount of oil, and that is enough oil to burn from evening until the morning. And in the normal course, without a miracle, in the morning the candles would all be out, and we would simply then clean out the oil, replace the wicks, don't light them, that is called Hatavas Haneros, and then towards the evening we would light them. Okay, and the same amount of oil is in all of the candles, but once in a while there was a miracle of this Ner Tamid. So in a sense, when you had the miracle of the Ner Tamid, every day was kind of like a Hanukkah miracle. Right? Hanukkah, the miracle was that you only had enough oil for one day and all seven candles burnt for 8 days. When we were zocha to the Ner Tamid, we had one candle that burnt. But here is something that also people don't realize, both for the Ner Tamid and even the story of Hanukkah. Even though the candle never went out, you had to put it out every day and relight it, because the menorah has to be relit every day. Even Hanukkah, people don't realize this. The Hanukkah story, according to Halacha, does not mean that they lit the candles the first day and those candles kept on burning for 8 days. That wouldn't be proper, because halachically you are mechuyev every single day to light the menorah. What you had to do every single day is, towards evening, you had to blow out the candles and relight them. And the miracle was that you were able to relight them. Okay, that is what the narrative. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Curious. When we tilted the wicks inwards, did that also make the flames point inwards?
Yes, that was the idea. The idea was that you would bend the wick so the flame would be...
That would normally happen if you bend the wick? I feel like it doesn't go straight up, no matter what.
It depends on the wind. Sometimes the flame can follow the... maybe that was also a bit of a miracle.
Yes, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I don't know physics.
The idea was that the flames themselves would bend towards the shaft. Okay, that's the idea of Ner Tumah. Now, which candle was the Ner Tumah? It's very interesting, right? In other words, when we were Zocha to the miracle. In other words, so the way we're describing the Ner Tumah is that I put in the oil and I lit the menorah towards the Kohen lit the menorah towards the evening, and most of the candles simply were burnt out by the morning, but the Ner Tumah remained burning until the evening, when you would then put it out. You see, you would then put it out and you would light all the candles. Okay? That's how it worked. So, and that's the miracle. The Ner Tumah did not have any more oil than any other candle, but it burnt twice as long. But again, I remember repeating, you have to put it out every day in order to be Mekayim Hadlaka. So which candle had the great miracle of the Ner Tumah, right? Which was the candle of the Ner Tumah? Yeah.
Just, okay, so yeah. You said you had to put oil in it because it did run out of oil?
Yes, okay, so it's a little complicated. You actually had to put it out twice. In other words, okay. Let me go back and restate it a bit more clearly. Let's start from day one, okay? Let's start from the very first time you lit the menorah. There was no Ner Tumah yet, right? So the first time you lit the menorah, so you put the oil and the wicks in the morning. That's called hatava, you know, improving the menorah. Towards the evening, before sunset, you would light those wicks, okay? And you'd have candles that are burning throughout the night, right? That's the idea. The candles are burning throughout the night. That's the mitzvah of the menorah. Now, in the morning, you would come, and generally speaking, by the morning, all the candles would be out, except for the Ner Tumah. Okay, so, with respect to the candles that are out, it's very simple. I simply empty out the old oil. I clean the charred ashes. I put in new oil. I put in new wicks. What do I do about the Ner Tumah? So here it's a little complicated. The way it works is that for the Ner Tumah, you delay the hatava, meaning to say, what you do is you don't clean it out. In other words, as opposed to the other candles, where you do the hatava in the morning and the hadlaka towards the evening, the Ner Tumah you would let burn until the night, not the night, but until the late afternoon. You would then extinguish it. You would then clean out the remnant of the oil. You would then put in new oil and new wicks, and then you would light all seven candles at the same time. Okay? So even the Ner Tumah had to get new oil and new wicks every day. And again, I'll repeat, there were many years that we did not have any miracle of the Ner Tumah. That's not a mitzvah. That's totally taloi on what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. Yeah.
So the Fidei Rambam that
they lit in the morning
was just another hadlaka.
Yeah.
What was the Ner Tumah according to the Rambam?
So according to the Rambam, there still was a Ner Tumah because according to the Rambam, the Ner Tumah never went out until you put it out. Meaning to say, according to the Rambam, when I showed up in the Beis Hamikdash in the morning, six of the candles would already be out, and then I would have to refill them. The Ner Tumah was not out till I put it up, meaning the Ner Tumah was still burning, so I would blow it out, then clean it out and put it in. Right, so that would be the difference. Okay, now, which candle was the Ner Tumah? Now you might say, well, why does it have to be the same candle? But Chazal had a Masorah, and it's not just a Masorah, they lived in the time of the Shimon HaTzadik, or at least there were Chachamim who lived in the time of Shimon HaTzadik. Like Shimon HaTzadik, no? Know your street, as we say. Shimon HaTzadik was the greatest of the Kohanim Gedolim of the Bayis Sheni. He was the last surviving member of the Anshei Knesses Hagdola, the men of the Great Assembly. This was a group that Ezra had established, 120 elders, and these were great, great tzaddikim and neviim, and they actually wrote the Siddur. They wrote the Shemona Esrei and everything else. They made many, many takanos. And Shimon HaTzadik was the last survivor, meaning they did not replace. As people died, they were not replaced, and he was the last survivor of the Anshei Knesses HaGdola. And you will remember that Shimon HaTzadik is quoted in Pirkei Avos with a very important teaching that everybody knows, but it is Shimon HaTzadik's teaching. Al Shlosha Devarim HaOlam Omed, the world stands on three pillars, Al HaTorah, V'Al HaAvoda, V'Al Gemilas Chasadim, on the study of Torah, on divine service, on loving kindness. This is the teaching of Shimon HaTzadik. You may know, Derech Agav as well, I'm just digressing about Shimon HaTzadik a little bit, that that during his Kahuna Gadola, 40 years he was a Kohen Gadol, Alexander the Great, Alexander of Macedon, conquered the Persian Empire. Because remember, the Second Temple was built under the rule of Persia, and Alexander conquered the Persian Empire, and by conquering the Persian Empire, he conquered Eretz Yisrael. And that's how we got under Greek domination, which later was the Hanukkah story. That's after Shimon HaTzadik's death, but it comes to Alexander. So the Gemara in Yuma recounts that Alexander wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash because he thought it was a source of rebellion against his authority. And Shimon, as he was at the gates of Yerushalayim, Shimon HaTzadik came out to beg for mercy. And when Alexander saw Shimon HaTzadik, he got off his horse and he bowed down because he said, "This is the image that comes to me in my dreams, telling me not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash." Apparently Alexander was having dreams of some man with a long white beard telling him, "Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this." And he just thought it was a nightmare. He didn't pay any attention. But then he sees, this is the person. He realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu must have sent him this dream. And he did not destroy the Mikdash because of this dream of Shimon HaTzadik. And the Gemara records that from that time on, for that year, every Jewish boy that was born was given the name Alexander in honor of that event. And that is how, you know, some people have the Hebrew name, Alexander. Right? They're called up to the Torah. How do they get called up to the Torah, Alexander? That's not a Jewish name, but the answer is that year it became adopted as a Jewish name. And we call people to the Torah that way, right, etc. Okay, so anyway, so the Ner Tamid did exist during Shimon HaTzadik's reign. So Chazal say the Ner Tamid is described as the Ner Ma'aravi, the Western candle. But then there's a Machlokas Rishonim. What do we mean by the Western candle? Now, first of all, keep in mind the following. If you have to think about the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, the layout is exactly the same. Right? You have a courtyard, and that's where the big Mizbeach is, where you bring the animal offerings. But then you enter a building with a roof. That building in the Midbar is called the Mishkan. When we have a Beis HaMikdash, that bigger building is called the Heichal. But that's the building. It's not the courtyard, it's the building. Now, if you walk into the building, you're walking from east to west, because the back of the building is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the westernmost point. So you're walking east to west. When you walk into the building, you're going to see a few things in front of you. Directly in front of you is a much smaller Mizbeach, not as big as the big, big Mizbeach outside where you brought the Korbanos. But there's a golden Mizbeach that's only one amma high, one amma, maybe 2 feet high. Right? The Kohen would have to bend over. And that golden altar was not used for Korbanos at all, with some very, very rare exceptions. But that was the altar which every day they burned Ketores. So that would be directly in front of you. Okay? Now, to your left... Now, what direction is to your left? To your left is the south, because if you're going east-west, to your left is the south, right? So, to your left would be the menorah. To your right would be a gold table where we put the lechem upon him. So, to the south is menorah. To the north is lechem upon him. And in fact, Chazal even say, we see from here, that if you want to pray to Hashem for wisdom, you should pray towards the south, because the menorah is the light of Torah. It's a sign of wisdom. If you want to pray for Parnasa, you pray towards the north, because the Shulchan, the Lechem HaPanim, is a sign of Parnasa. Now, the Gemara then explains, what does that mean? Wherever you are, you're supposed to pray towards Yerushalayim, which is east, west, or whatever it is. But the Gemara says, yeah, you always face Yerushalayim, but if you want Parnasa, you turn a little bit to the north, northeast. If you want Chachma of Torah, you go to the southeast. No, you're mitzvahed yourself. Now, of course, in my old show, this was a running joke we had for many years. In my old show, because of architecture before I was there, our Aron HaKodesh was located due north, due north. So the joke was, well, those are the priorities, right? You have just some parnasa, you want money. Now, when the menorah is on the southern wall, what direction did it go, though? In other words, was the menorah along an east-west plane, or was the menorah along a north-south plane? So the answer is, the menorah was parallel to the east-west wall. So the menorah, in other words, was east-west. The candles of the menorah were aligned east-west, as opposed to north-south, meaning if this is the east-west wall, the menorah went this way, the menorah didn't go this way. Although it's a machlokas, but that's how we paskin. So, consequently, if the candles are aligned on an east-west plane, then Rashi says, the simplest explanation of Ner Ma'aravi is the westernmost candle, which is the one that is closest to the Holy of Holies. Right? That makes perfect sense. That if you're talking about which Ner should have the miraculous occurrence of never going out until we put it out, that's the holiest candle. So we would imagine the holiest candle is the one that is furthest west, because it is adjacent, well, it's not adjacent, it's still far from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but it's the closest to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. However, Tosfos learns differently, and I'm not sure I understand the logic of Tosfos. Tosfos has proofs for it, but I don't know why the Hashgacha would mean this way. Tosfos says, no, Ner Ma'aravi simply means the second candle on the east, and it's simply called Ma'aravi because it is west of the easternmost candle. So according to Tosfos, if you numbered the candles going east-west, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, Rashi says candle number 7 is near Ma'aravi, and Tosfos says candle number 2 is near Ma'aravi. But as I say, I'm not sure I understand the logic of Tosfos. Okay? So this is the mitzvah of menorah. Now let me mention a halachic anomaly that's really quite interesting. That is, we mentioned that according to most Rishonim, including Rashi here, there are two mitzvahs of the menorah. Every morning, there had to be hatavas haneiros, cleaning out the old oil, putting in new oil, putting in new wicks, and not lighting. And then towards the evening, there was hadlakas haneiros. Now, hadlakas haneiros, according to halacha, doesn't have to be done by a kohen. B'di'evet. B'di'evet. Not only does Aaron not have to do it, but even a regular Kohen doesn't have to do it. Hadlakas haneiros is kosher even through a zor. A zor is a non-Kohen. It's not called an avoda. It is just like, there are certain things in the Beis Hamikdash that a non-Kohen can do. In fact, even by a korban, right? Does anyone know what activity can a non-Kohen, a very important activity, that a non-Kohen is kosher to do when a korban is brought? Yeah. That's correct. A non-Kohen can shecht the korban, although once you're receiving the blood and sprinkling the blood and burning the portions on the mizbeach, that can only be done by a Kohen. But shechita is kosher with a non-Kohen, and by the same token, the Rambam understands from different Gemaras that hadlakas menorah is kasher bezor. Now, he then asks a very good kasha on himself, and that is, well, wait a second here. How can a zor light the menorah? Bishlama, how can a zor shecht the korban? Shechita of a korban is in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan. A non-Kohen who's tohor is allowed to enter the courtyard. Right? We could, if we would be tohor, we could enter the azor. So a non-Kohen could shecht. But the Hadlakas HaMenorah was not in the courtyard. The Hadlakas HaMenorah was in the Mishkan or in the Heichal. A non-Kohen cannot enter that area. So how could you light the menorah if you're not allowed to even enter. Now, and you can't give an answer, we take the menorah out and you light it and then bring it in, because just like by Hanukkah candles, you're only yotzei hadlaka if you light it in the right place, right? The analogy would be, if you're lighting by a window, you can't light it on a table, then bring it to a window. You have to light it by a window. Same thing. In fact, for Keret, that's the origin of this halacha. I mean, this came before Hanukkah, that you have to light the menorah in the right place. So the Rambam says, you're right. He comes up with a crazy case. The only way a non-Kohen could light the menorah is he has a very long stick, meaning to say, he is standing in the courtyard, and he lights a long stick that he's able to manipulate into the heichal and light the menorah. So even though he's not standing in the heichal, but as long as the menorah is in the heichal, this would be a valid hadlaka. This is hadlaka kashera bazor. Now, what's interesting though is that even though the hadlaka could be done by a non-kohen, the hatovas haneros can only be done by a kohen. If a non-kohen cleans the lamps and put in new oil and wicks, the mitzvah, the lighting later is not a valid mitzvah, because it has to come from a kohen. Now, l'chora, logically, we might assume that this should be the opposite case, because it seems to be that hatavas haneros is like a hechsher mitzvah. It's a preparation for the lighting. The main mitzvah is the lighting, and yet when it comes to the main mitzvah, anybody can do it. And when it comes to the preliminaries, you have to have a kohen. Why should that be so? So the Bali Musar say an interesting thought here, and that is, we know that menorah generally is a remez for spiritual growth, the light of Torah, divine understanding. And indeed, every single person is capable of that wisdom of Torah, of learning and growing. But hatavas haneros represents preparing the receptacle, preparing the environment, so it will be able to receive the divine light. And that is a harder accomplishment, meaning to say, sometimes it is much more difficult to create the environment that allows a person to flourish than it is to actually flourish. A yeshiva would be a good example. In fact, this is a big lesson about a karas hatov. In any yeshiva, or in any home for that matter, there are so many things and so many people who work behind the scenes to create the environment that allows a person to flourish. People, some of whom we don't know their name. In fact, this was an interesting story I read, and not that I could do any better, but the story was that on a final exam, a professor asked, can you name the cleaning crew? You know, this was a final exam. He says, well, most people didn't answer that question correctly. And the professor's point is that there are many, many people in our lives, our family, people behind the scenes, garbage collectors, who really do a lot to make an environment that we're able to function. But we don't even notice them. We don't appreciate them. We don't see them. We're not makir tov. And the lesson of hatava is that it's not only the actual light that's important, but the people that create the environment. And that's why the Torah says they're very special. They're miyuchad. They are the meitivim. They are the ones that create in the bowl the ability for that menorah to be lit. Right? So it's a mushur to think about. Again, I'm giving mushur to myself as well. I'm certainly no better than anyone else. But it is something to think about, that how much of our lives depend on all sorts of nameless people that we sometimes don't have any sense of hakaras hatov or recognition, whether it's policemen, whether it's chayolim, even chilonim, right? I know with the draft and the yeshiva world, there's a lot of tension right now. But whatever the position is on whether yeshiva students should be in the army, all right, let's say they shouldn't be in the army, okay? Naniach, that Torah is the most important thing. But the one thing you cannot deny is that anyone that is in the army is giving a service for Am Yisrael and risking their lives. That's why I have to totally disassociate myself from the occasional events that occur when a religious soldier goes into a minyan, maybe you've heard of some of this, and there are people who kick him out or insult him or spit at him, there is no, it's just wrong. There is no justification. Even if a person says that what the government is doing is totally wrong, the individual chayal that is in the army is serving Klal Yisrael, right? And is a shaliach of Hashem to help us try to be safe in a dangerous environment. That's a remez of Hatava. Hatava represents the actors behind the scene who are not necessarily the big lights. They're not the lighting of the menorah, but they are the machshirim. They are the enablers. That would include your parents. That would include all sorts of people in our lives that help us. For a married person, that would include his wife, of course, right, who is the koach that allows all of these things to happen. Right, so that's the chiluk between Hatavas and Eros and Hadlakas and Eros. Now, Rashi brings another interesting point, and the phrase Bahaloscha es haneros. Now that literally means when you cause the flames to go up. Now that seems to be a fancy phrase for lighting. Like when you cause the flames to go up, the wicks should be facing the central core. But Rashi raises the question, why do we describe when you cause the flames to go up? Why don't we use the simpler word? Bahadlikes haneros, when you light the candles. What is when you cause the flame to go up? So Rashi says an important halacha, that when the Kohen, or the non-Kohen, because I just told you the non-Kohen could light as well, but when the person lights the candle, you have to leave your match or your flame on the candle until the wick gets hot enough that a flame arises from inside. Right? Are you familiar with this? In other words, what happens when you light a wick is normally the wick seems to be lit from the outside, right? And it burns in. Right? I light a candle, so what did I set on fire? The outer part of the wick. And then it moves in. But if you leave the fire there long enough, what happens is the heat penetrates in, and it actually generates a secondary fire coming from the inside. Not that from the outside the fire goes in, but the fire comes from the inside out. So it says Aaron has to leave his match, so to speak, on the wick, until there is a shalheves, a torch, a flame, that is coming up from within. Right? That's ba'aloscha. You cause the flame to come up from the inside. What does that teach us, though? Rashi doesn't give you a teaching, but Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch says a beautiful idea, that since the menorah is a remez to the light of Torah, so in a sense, the one who lights the menorah is the Rebbe who teaches you Torah. And the job of a Rebbe is to ignite the Talmud, the student, so that the fire comes up from within the student. Meaning to say, the goal is not simply that you receive all the fire of the Torah that the Rebbe is giving you, but rather, from the Torah that you're getting, something wells up inside of you. Your originality, your chidushim, your ability to learn. And therefore, if the Rebbe does not enable the Talmud to kind of be a source of Torah himself, the Rebbe has not done his job. Right? So that explains the tremendous antipathy that Or Sameach Rebbes have for Art Scroll. Although I love Art Scroll, and Art Scroll is really great, so why don't we have an Art Scroll in the Beis Medrash? I would appreciate it. But you know, the short answer is that you understand, and I think the center in particular is committed to this idea, that learning Torah is a mitzvah no matter what. In other words, just to sit and learn is a great, great mitzvah. Okay, you can, if you're learning from English, whatever you're doing, learning is a great mitzvah. But in addition to the tremendous mitzvah of Talmud Torah, there is another goal to give you the tools and the ability to be able to do this yourself, even when you're not with the Rebbe and you're not in yeshiva, right? That to be able to take out a Gemara, to be able to take out a Tosfos, to be able to take out a Rashba or a Rambam, and be able to learn. Meaning, there is a definite goal of self-sufficiency. And that's exactly what Rav Hirsch is saying. that when the Kohen lights the menorah, he keeps the light there until a flame comes from within. That is, you know, you stay until you're able, as it were, yourself, to be a source of Torah. So the fear with translations and everything else is that they're so good, and they'll give you an immediate explanation and an immediate answer, but because you were not working on it, so you're not going to develop the skill, as it were. So sometimes you need to kind of not have. Now, in my day, it was much easier. In my day, in yeshiva, there was no art scroll. So all we had was the Sansino. And Sansino b'chlal is not so easy to use. So I do remember, it's a little risque, but I do remember there were certain gemaras that talked about things that were not so tznius, that our Rebbe skipped. But they were there, they actually were very important, but in high school he skipped it. So all of us were in Eretz Yisrael. We were all looking for a Sansino that kind of filled it in. But you know, but it was very hard. We couldn't, you know, Eretz Yisrael didn't really have Sansinos either. But Baruch Hashem, so in every generation, Hashem gives new opportunities and new nisyonos. The new opportunities is Baruch Hashem, He gave us so many great, great translations and other swarm that can really help us. That's tremendous, tremendous gift. But it's a great nisyon, because when you become over-dependent on these aids, you will never learn the koach of learning it yourself. And that's what Rav Hirsch says, is the shalheves has to be ola me'elav. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, the other thing is this. And this will be a kasha on the Rambam, actually. Why is the mitzvah of Benaira even mentioned here? I mean, the Mishkan was dedicated, but there's no particular reason to mention Benaira. So Rashi says, this is an aftermath of the 12 days when the Nisim brought Korbanos. Now remember, without repeating our discussion yesterday, remember there's the first 12 days of the dedication of the Mishkan, the Nasi of every tribe brought an offering, and the offering was the same. Now, yesterday we talked about, were the 12 days Rosh Chodesh Nisan till the 12th of Nisan? Or were the 12 days from the 8th of Nisan to the 20th of Nisan, right? That depends when the 7 days of consecration took place. But be it as it may, at the end of Parshas Naso, we had 12 days called Chanukah Sabayis, in which the Mishkan was dedicated by the special offerings that the Nisim brought. So Rashi points out that every single tribe brought a korban, except for the tribe of Levi, which is Aaron's tribe. Aaron's tribe didn't bring a korban. So Aaron, as God did not tell Aaron's tribe to bring a korban. So Aaron the Kohen is very much bitzar. Aaron the Kohen is in great pain. Because Aaron still feels that perhaps Hashem has, even though it's a mudna thing, because Aaron is going to be the Kohen, so how can he think? It's a difficult habamina, but Aaron is saying, oh, if Hashem is telling me not to bring a korban, perhaps Hashem is punishing me and rejecting my tribe because of the chait ha'egel in which Aaron participated. Aaron had what is called chalishas hadas. He had a weakness of the mind. He was depressed. He was worried. Now, I don't have a good answer to this, because it seems that Aaron's supposition is not rational for two reasons. Number one, it's not rational because how could he view his not bringing a korban as a sign of divine rejection if Aaron is going to be the Kohen who's doing the whole Avodah? I mean, Aaron has been given the job of being the Kohen, he just didn't bring this korban. Now maybe the answer is, he understands that God is accepting him, but he thinks that the not bringing the korban is a partial musar, a rebuke. Another kasha is, that although Aaron was one who built the egel, although l'shem Shemai, remember, he wanted to delay, but on the other hand, Shevet Levi were the people who stood up for Hashem and they killed the sinners. So why would Shevet Levi be rejected because of Aaron's role in the chayt egel? Okay, but being as it may, Rashi says Aaron had chalisha sadas. So Hashem reassures Aaron, don't think that you're not bringing a korban because I'm rejecting you. It's the other way around. Your mitzvah is greater than their mitzvah. because you will have the mitzvah of madlik and nativ as haneiros. So this was said to Aaron at this point as a comfort. Now the Emes says, according to the Rambam, this is very schwer, because hadlakas haneiros is not limited to a kohen, right? So how is this comforting Aaron? Maybe hatava. But the Ramban is aimed. What does Rashi mean when he says your mitzvah is greater than theirs? Your mitzvah is greater. Why is it greater? Korbanos and menorah. What makes one mitzvah greater than the other? So the Ramban brings the following interesting idea. Because their mitzvah only applies when there's a Beis HaMikdash. They can bring korbanos or a mishkan. But your mitzvah of menorah will apply even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. And the Ramban says, this is a very amazing Ramban, this is a remez to the miracle of Hanukkah, which is a miracle that Hashem did through the Kohanim of the Chashmonaim, which will be an eternal mitzvah that Am Yisrael is going to fulfill even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So according to Ramban, this comfort is a remez to the miracle of Hanukkah, meaning the mitzvah of menorah that's given to you will be commemorated by Am Yisrael in all of the generations. Madlik umeitiv es haneiros, right? This is what the Ramban says. Now, one other point about the menorah. The menorah had to be miksha. Now, miksha means one solid piece of gold, meaning you don't hammer pieces of gold together. You don't have a piece and hammer them. It has to be, now of course gold is melted in form, right? So the gold is melted, but it's not separate pieces. Miksha. Now there are three things that the Torah say have to be miksha, solid. One is menorah. One is chatzotros. We read later that in the Midbar there were silver trumpets that were made, and they were used in different ways to summon the nation when it was time to leave, when a time of war. Chatzotros, not shofar. Shofar is an animal horn. These are silver chatzotros. And the third is the paroches. I'm sorry, not the paroches. The kapores, the gold cover on top of the ark, had kruvim, had cherubs on them. So the cherubs had to be miksha. They had to be one solid piece of gold. So the Sifrei Drush say that there's an important lesson here. The quality of miksha is consistency. Miksha means, because if it's one solid piece, see, I don't know if you ever had the occasion, sometimes they sell something, they sell a product, it's like a filter fish wood, meaning press board, meaning it's a lot of different types of woods that are pressed together. And if you ever try to bang a nail through that wood, it's very, very strange. Some places it'll be soft, and some places it'll be hard, and you won't be able, when you make a sukkah from those types of woods, you know, you can't predict. It goes in one place and it doesn't go out the other place. But when something is miksha, it is the same inside and outside. It represents consistency. It's not different. It doesn't change, because it's all one solid piece. So miksha is a remez to the notion of being consistent, of not changing from day to day. So the Sifrei Drush say there are three inyanim in which a person has to be consistent, not changing. One is the menorah. The menorah, we already said, is a remez to limud ha-Torah, the light of the Torah. There are going to be days, of course, where a person is in the mood, more in the mood, less in the mood. Right? We all have moods, we all have different shifts. But a person has to be mishtadel, that they shouldn't be a creature of their moods. That even in a bad day, you know, you kind of work harder to force yourself to do something. Right? That's miksha. Don't change with the moods, don't change with the times. That is one idea. The second is the kruvim. The kruvim were in the image of young children. That Amir Hashem, when you will be a parent, one of the important lessons of a parent is consistency in raising your children. Now that doesn't mean be mean, and that doesn't mean be super disciplined. I just want to remind you of Chazal's teaching that Chazal say that the right hand, which is the strong hand, should always be one of love, and the left hand, which is the weaker hand, that's discipline. So in child raising, there needs to be a lot more love than discipline. That's 100% the case. Right? We're not talking about yelling, screaming, hitting. But there also needs to be consistency, meaning the kids have to know what is important in the house, what are the values of the house. If one day this is important, then the katrus is important, and the next day it doesn't make a difference what candy they eat, they're not going to know how to live, right? So, miksha, it has to be the same with your children. That's the kruvim. And the third, the chatzotzros, represents the leadership of the community. That if you're a rebbe, right, so your community is a yeshiva, or if you're a melech or a nasi, a political leader, once again, you have to be consistent. You cannot change your standards and change your rules every day. Right? So that's what miksha. Miksha is the notion of being unified and one, and that's for limud ha-Torah, for raising a family, and for exercising leadership in a community. Right? So those are ramazim and miksha. Yeah.
Do you know why the article translates miksha as hammered out?
Well, That is what it is. It means hammered out, but you have to go a little further, and that is hammered out from a single piece of gold as opposed to combining different pieces of gold. So you find, right, you extract from the ground gold, and instead of doing it a little piece, now, you know, it depends how you see, it would be, actually, it's very hard to get miksha, because normally when you extract gold ore, you have a little piece of gold here and a little piece of gold here. That's not good. You got to find a vein of gold that's big enough to make a whole menorah, and then you mold it and you melt it. That's what miksha. And you mold it, you know, you melt it, and then you hammer it. Gold is a soft metal. Gold is not a hard metal. But miksha really means it has to be one piece. That's really the most important thing about. Okay, you have a good Shabbos. And you'd be...